Raw Health Radio.
Alrighty, friends, welcome back to episode number 038 of Raw Health Radio. Talking to me today about the thyroid, we've got Dr. Michael Ruscio on the line. He's a functional medicine expert, which we're going to talk about in just a second. He's a doctor of chiropractic medicine. He has a Bachelor of Science in Exercise Kinesiology, which is what I studied not that long ago. And he's a friend of my buddy, Dr. Kalish, so he's definitely welcome on the show. And he's currently doing some research into the interesting world of SIBO, doing some amazing stuff there. So, Dr. Ruscio, how are you going today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining me. Now, I want to talk for a second about the first thing that I mentioned there in your bio, which is that you're a functional medicine expert. And you have an interesting story about how you came to discover this world of functional medicine. What exactly happened to you?
Right. Well, the functional medicine world and the paleo world, I kind of stumbled into, thankfully. When I was 23, I was in college, pre-med. Also, I played lacrosse and was used to being just super, super high energy and, competed at a pretty high athletic level. And all of a sudden, I just started feeling fatigued, depressed, had really bad insomnia, lost a little bit of weight, was feeling cold for the first time in my life. I had a lot of symptoms, actually, of hypothyroid. And I went to see a few conventional doctors, and they ran some tests and said everything's normal. And, of course, I was extremely frustrated because I knew something had clearly changed. And this whole time I was exercising, I was getting enough sleep, I was eating really well, I really enjoyed my life. So there was no dietary or lifestyle factor that we could really blame this on. And eventually, I ended up finding a functional medicine doctor. It was actually Dr. Kalish, and he thought I might have an intestinal parasite. And to me, that seemed quite a bit odd, but I didn't really have any other options. So I said, what the heck, let's do some testing and see if that is the case. And I did. I ended up having a pretty bad intestinal amoeba infection. And through going through that process, I learned that you can treat the hypothyroid symptoms or the insomnia symptoms, which I had been trying to do up until I started working with the functional medicine doctor. And if you're just treating the symptoms, you tend to have very minimal results. And it wasn't until I actually identified the underlying cause of the problem, treated that intestinal infection, that I really started to improve. So that showed me firsthand the importance of gut health on many other systems of your body, including thyroid, and the importance of really treating the underlying cause, because you can treat something naturally, but if you're treating a symptom naturally and you're not treating the cause at the same time, then you're really going to be limited in your ability to recover. And so that's the brunt of it. And the other thing I fell into a lot of the paleo diet concepts as I was trying to recover my gut health. I didn't know what the paleo diet was, but I pretty much started eating the autoimmune paleo diet through my own trial and error and observation. And then when I found the paleo movement, it really resonated. That's kind of the story on my story.
What an amazing man Dr. Kalish is, right?
He's a great guy, and he was a really fantastic influence on me early on. He took me under his wing, and he got me pointed in the right direction with functional medicine, yeah.
So if I'm a conventional medicine doctor, I'm looking at your symptoms, things like fatigue, insomnia, depression, and I'm just thinking, oh, this guy's a perfect case for some kind of SSRI or antidepressant, but that wouldn't have done a thing for your intestinal problem that you had going on.
Right, and that's very likely that's potentially where I would have ended up if I had not found the underlying cause and treated the underlying gut infection, yes. And I'm thankful that I did, because I would hate to be someone who's just bouncing from antidepressant to antidepressant only getting minimal results, because the research is fairly clear on antidepressant medications that they have essentially the same effect as a placebo for those with mild to moderate depression. They do help those that are severely depressed meaning you literally can't get out of bed, you're so depressed. The medications seem to help that population, but for people with mild to moderate depression, they're not highly effective according to some of the best systemic reviews that we have. So I probably would have been on those medications, but not really getting a whole lot of relief from them.
If I've got moderate depression, I'm not really that interested in a placebo effect, to be honest. So I'd want something a bit more than that.
Exactly,
now,
yeah.
Yeah, now we're talking about the thyroid today. So for everyone out there who's listening, what exactly is a thyroid? Where does it live? What does it do? What's its role?
The thyroid is a hormonal gland in the base of your neck that produces thyroid hormone. And thyroid hormone is, at the very foundational level, responsible for cellular metabolism. So every cell in the body has a thyroid hormone receptor, and thyroid hormone stimulates cells to carry out their metabolic processes. So if there are skin cells, for skin cells to regenerate, if there are brain cells, for brain cells to function so that you have better memory and better thinking ability and happier moods. If it's an intestinal cell, it might be responsible for secretion of acids and enzymes and absorption of nutrients. If it's gonadal cells, might be responsible for taking cholesterol from the bloodstream and converting that cholesterol into things like testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. If it's adrenal cells, for producing adrenal hormone. So when people are hypothyroid, then they can see a lot of these cellular processes wane, and then you can have a whole litany of symptoms as a byproduct of that. Like I just mentioned, you know, depression or fatigue or feeling cold or constipation or other digestive problems or low hormone levels or high cholesterol levels, just to name a few.
Now, the thyroid's pretty important. I don't think I'm getting this right, but if I am, then good. Thyroid hormone and cortisol are the only two hormones that don't need a receptor site on a cell to have an effect on that cell. Is that right?
Oh, boy. I don't know if we can fully say that because we have – I mean, it depends if you're talking about nuclear receptors or non-nuclear receptors. But I, as I understand it, thyroid hormone, you will need receptors for that. So I don't know if we can fully say that. But again, there's probably a partial plausible explanation for that. But the receptor piece, I think we're still – mapping out in a lot of these regards.
Maybe it was something else. I'm not 100% sure, but it's a big deal. So what would some signs and symptoms of dysfunction or disorder in the thyroid look and feel like? You touched on a couple earlier, but what in someone's day-to-day life would they be experiencing?
Right. Sure. So some of the keynote symptoms would be fatigue, feeling cold. That could be cold hands or cold feet or just feeling cold globally. You could have thinning hair. You may also experience dry skin or brittle nails. You may notice that digestive function slows, or you feel constipated or bloated, or you just have some digestive distress. You may notice that you have high cholesterol levels. You may notice your libido decreases. You may become partially infertile. There's just so many. You may be depressed or have a hard time with thinking or memory. So there's quite a litany of symptoms that can be attributed to being this is hypothyroid. Now there's also a opposite clinical entity, which is hyperthyroid, when the thyroid gets sped up. And I just want to quickly make a note that hypothyroidism oftentimes receives the majority of the attention, but Graves' disease or the condition that causes hyperthyroidism is also something that is important for people to know, that functional medicine, especially a functional medicine with a high level of familiarity with thyroid conditions, can be very well treated by the functional medicine approach. And one of the reasons why that's so important is because oftentimes people with hyperthyroidism or Graves' disease can eventually be pushed to have their thyroid gland surgically removed or essentially destroyed with what's called radioactive ablation therapy. And I've been able to save, to date, every Graves or hypothyroid case I've worked with, I've been able to save from having to do that. So I'm sure a day will come where I can't save someone, but it's just important that people know that there are some great resources out there. And if they do visit my website, there's a podcast on that topic specifically, and there's also an article that we've written on that outlines some of the treatment.
That's one thing that kind of annoys me quite a lot. Like, I can understand when doctors give people SSRIs, if they come in and say, hey, I'm depressed, like that seems relatively obvious, but just mutilating someone's body and cutting parts out just because that seems to be the smartest idea rather than really going through and checking it is crazy to me. But what would hyperthyroidism actually feel like?
Well, hyperthyroidism would look like pretty much everything I just mentioned, but in reverse. Instead of feeling cold, you might feel hot. Instead of dry skin, you might have oily skin. Instead of feeling tired, you might feel jittery. And these people literally have highly elevated heart rates, and they have insomnia because it's overstimulation of their heart tissue. And this is one of the major risk factors for hyperthyroidism, and one of the reasons why conventional medicine does remove or destroy the thyroid gland, because they're trying to prevent you from having a cardiovascular episode, which can kill you. So, you know, given no other better option, it's a lesser of two evils. You may notice that you have loose stools or diarrhea. You may lose weight. You may feel hot all the time. I think I already mentioned that one. So those are some of the symptoms of hyperthyroidism, but essentially it's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum as hypothyroid.
Gotcha. Now, is there a certain kind of person or personality type who are more likely to be affected by these thyroid problems? Have you noticed any kind of common characteristics amongst your patients?
That's an interesting question. Certainly, there's a sex differentiation where women tend to be more so affected by hypothyroidism and most autoimmune conditions. And the primary driver of hypothyroidism in westernized countries is thyroid autoimmunity, or what's known as Hashimoto's, and this is a gradual damaging and destruction from your own immune system of the thyroid gland that can result in being hypothyroid. So it's an autoimmune condition, and women tend to have more autoimmune conditions than men, with a couple exceptions, and we think part of the reason for that may be because estrogen actually causes, for lack of a better term, estrogen stimulates the immune system, and testosterone partially suppresses the immune system. And so when we combined an environment, Western environments, for a number of reasons, seem to be soil through which these autoimmune conditions can grow. If you have an environment that's favorable for autoimmunity that many of us are living in, and then you accelerate that with a certain hormonal profile that we find in women, that's potentially how we see a higher incidence in women, whereas men have a hormonal profile that seems to protect from over-immune stimulation. And we think part of the reason why men have less incidence might be because of the hormonal perspective. We can't really change the hormones, or I wouldn't recommend that we change the hormones, but we can try to do everything possible to change the environment.
Mm. I'm sure there's a downside to being a man if it's not getting something like Hashimoto's. So let's talk about weight loss then, because you said hypothyroid would be slowing the body down. What does that actually mean from a weight gain or a body fat percentage perspective?
Well, that's a really interesting and really important question, and I think it's one that's shrouded in a bit of in quite a bit of misinformation. And I recently did a podcast where we reviewed this in quite a bit of detail. I think it was about 45 minutes just on this one topic alone. So I'll give a few of the high points here, but I'm sorry to keep referring to my website, but I just want to make people aware of where they can get an expansion on some of these topics if they were looking for it. And I went through a fairly comprehensive review of the medical literature, because sometimes I'm admittedly irritated by the field of functional medicine. As much as I love it, sometimes we have people making claims and they haven't really done a thorough check in the scientific literature to see if that claim is actually true or not. And so one of the things I try to do is fact check a lot of the things that we do in functional medicine to make sure that what I'm doing is really as accurate or as close to accurate as possible. So with regard to weight, I think the effects on weight gain have been overemphasized. It's not the amount of weight that we see in hypothyroid is not as marked as many people might think. So if someone is truly hypothyroid, they have about a 50-50 chance of maybe losing about 5 pounds from going on thyroid hormone. Now, that would be nice, right? Five-ish pounds. But I certainly wouldn't say that's highly significant, right? And that's what we see when we look at the best reviews of clinical trials where people have been given thyroid hormone and seeing what kind of weight loss it produces. And that's for those who are truly hypothyroid, meaning their lab, their TSH would be flagged high and their T4 would likely be flagged low. Now, something interesting that we do see from looking at this literature also is people that have taken a combination of thyroid hormone that contains T4 and T3 may lose a little bit more weight. They may experience slightly better weight loss, and they may experience a better overall feeling of well-being. So I certainly think that we can make a justification for something like Natrothroid or Armour if someone is hypothyroid. But again, that's for people who are hypothyroid. And I have to say, just clinically, what I observe is quite a number of patients, I'd say probably actually in alignment with what some of these studies have found, about half of the patients that come to my office after being put on a thyroid medication notice little to nothing in the way of weight loss. Some people do, but I would say 50% in my own personal clinical estimation, maybe a little bit higher, have very little weight loss from thyroid. So to zoom us out for a second, if we look at some of the trials where people change their diet, for example, we may see easily an excess of 15 pounds lost. And oftentimes when patients come into my clinic and usually we'll start them on the paleo diet or potentially the autoimmune version of the paleo diet, we will routinely see over 10 pounds of weight loss in the first 30 days. And depending on how bad someone's diet was initially, we may see over 20 pounds of weight loss in the first 30 days. So to give that relativity, thyroid hormone receives so much attention as, gosh, I'm hypothyroid, or I'm sorry, gosh, I'm overweight, I must be hypothyroid, or it must be because of a thyroid problem. But where we should really be stereotyping a huge cause of weight gain should be with diet. Because if we look at the literature and just clinical experience, we see quite a bit better results with diet than we do with thyroid hormone.
Mm. So is there a cause and effect then between bad diet and having low thyroid function? I know I've heard people say before in the past, if you're eating lots of toxins, your body will, or your thyroid will slow down your metabolism to stop those toxins from getting through to your blood too right. quickly. Is that right. what, is that, is it kind of chicken and egg backwards there?
Well, do toxins cause hypothyroidism? Yes and no. So it depends a little bit on the toxin that we're talking about and a little bit about the dose. So I don't know. I would classify gluten as a toxin per se, but dietary gluten can be very problematic for some people. Of course, people with celiac disease, it's going to be a major issue. There's some debate about people that have a quote unquote gluten allergy but don't have celiac. It's an entity known as non-celiac gluten sensitivity. We're seeing more and more research published showing that people who aren't celiac can legitimately have a problem with gluten and will feel better from taking gluten out of their diet. And we have trials looking at people who have removed gluten from their diet and been able to decrease their thyroid medication dose and seen their level of thyroid autoimmunity, or this process that damages the thyroid, decrease quite substantially. And I can tell you in the clinic, I will routinely see when a patient goes off gluten, and I would say the majority of cases, that their thyroid autoimmunity improves and their thyroid function overall seems to improve. So that's maybe a pseudotoxin or a dietary antigen or a food allergen, we could say. Then there are things people may have heard of, the family of potential toxins called the halogens. This would be iodine, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine. And if people have looked into this issue, they may have heard you should do some sort of detox to push the bromine and the fluoride and the chlorine out of your system by taking high doses of iodine, for example. And I think those claims are actually very much inflated. As long as you're not ingesting a lot of these compounds, a lot of chlorine, fluoride, and bromine, then they really shouldn't be an issue because the body will remove them on its own within a number of days. So yes, these compounds, these elements, fluoride, bromine, and chlorine, or chloride, they can be damaging. But if you're filtering your water, if you're not eating a lot of processed foods that contain some of these compounds, then you're really going to mitigate most of your exposure to these, and you shouldn't have a lot of risk. Now,
can I just ask you to repeat that for 1 second? Because it sounded like you said people who drink tap water, or tap juice as I call it,
right,
end up gaining weight, not because of the water itself, but because of what it does to the thyroid, which then affects their metabolism. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not sure how strongly we can say weight, because I think the link between hypothyroid and weight gain has been overemphasized and may not be as large of a factor as we've thought. But certainly, drinking tap water could cause hypothyroid. And up until just recently, I had questioned this, but there was recently a study, and I did perform a YouTube review of this study if people wanted to get the details. But the short story is, in England, they looked at two communities. They studied two communities. One community that had non-fluoridated water, and the other community that had fluoridated water. Now, what they observed was that in the community that had water fluoridation or fluoridated water, the incidence of hypothyroid was about double of that in the community with non-fluoridated water. So this is just an observational study, and sometimes we have to be careful with how strong of a conclusion we draw from an observational study. But it certainly is very interesting and made me take a step back and say, well, okay, this is a nice point that reinforces the practical item of just drinking filtered water, or probably even better yet, so you don't create a lot of plastic pollution, buying a good water filter that will remove fluoride, because that would be an example of, if you're drinking fluoridated tap water every day, that would be an example of a chronic exposure to a toxin. Now, if you just filter your tap water and remove that exposure, then the fluoride should leave your system fairly quickly, and your thyroid function should be just fine.
Gotcha. So we've covered gluten. You mentioned halogens like bromine, fluoride, chlorine, all that kind of stuff. What else is there that can cause problems for the thyroid?
Well, there's another, I guess, class of thyroid condition. I like to look at thyroid conditions in two classes. And the reason why I do this is because one of the pet peeves I have is sometimes I think these thyroid conditions are made overly complicated, right? I've seen blogs that say, 24 patterns of thyroid dysfunction or what have you. And I really think that's just really overcomplicating the issue. I think we can break this down into two categories. Are you autoimmune? Do you have an autoimmune thyroid condition? Or are you non-autoimmune and your thyroid problem is what we would call a functional disorder, or a conversion problem? So we've talked about the autoimmune piece a little bit, but the other piece would be where someone doesn't have a diagnosable thyroid condition, meaning they're not hypothyroid, they don't have thyroid autoimmunity, but they still exhibit a lot of these symptoms. And in that case, the thyroid gland itself is okay, it's producing hormone, but the hormone isn't working in the body appropriately. This is a lot of people the people that have normal thyroid testing, but they still exhibit all the symptoms of being hypothyroid. And these people typically have a problem with conversion of T4 to T3. And the solution to that is really in finding what it is that is causing stress and or inflammation in the body, because that is ultimately what will derange that conversion of T4 to T3. So some of the things that can do that would be stress, right? And a simple thing, but is definitely very important. Sleep would be another, can have a very profound effect on thyroid hormone conversion. Diet, as we mentioned, for example, inflammatory diet, like a diet that might be high in gluten if you have a problem with it, or other grains if you have a problem with grains or other inflammatory foods. And then also the health of your gut. Certain gut infections can definitely cause inflammation, and that inflammation will cause you to feel hypothyroid, just like happened in my case, right? My thyroid was normal, but I had symptoms of hypothyroid because I had a gut infection causing inflammation, and that inflammation didn't allow my thyroid hormone to work properly in the body. And then that would probably be some of the most important starting points for, you know, other things that we can look into and address in trying to improve our thyroid health.
So what should someone do if they suspect they've got one of these thyroid problems with regards to their lifestyle? Should they keep exercising? Should they stop? What are your recommendations there?
Well, the exercise recommendation is predicated upon how everything else looks, right? Exercise is a stressor, and stressors are healthy as long as your body can recover from them, right? So if you're not sleeping enough, you have a lot of stress at work, and you're not eating very well, then you probably can't handle a high level of exercise. I would still like someone to be exercising, but that might be someone where I say, okay, 20 to 30 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week, right? Because you have so much other stress in your life that having you work out for an hour, 6 days a week, on top of all these other stressors, would just push you over the edge and would be counterproductive at that point. Because, of course, as I'm sure as you know, overtraining can be a legitimate issue for some people. So the amount of exercise really depends on all the other stuff, and all the other stuff essentially boils down to the healthier you are, the more exercise that you can tolerate. Irrespective, I think some exercise is going to be important because exercise is anti-inflammatory, does help with gut, does help with sleep. So there's a lot of benefits to exercise, but being careful not to go over that threshold is definitely important.
Gotcha. What about things like sleep or frequency of eating or food quality? Is there anything you've got for people around that?
Definitely. So the dietary, you know, food quality piece that I like, I would really have someone start with the paleo diet. Is your audience familiar with the paleo diet?
They are very familiar.
Okay. So paleo diet, great place to start. The autoimmune paleo diet, if you kind of want to go the extra mile. And that's actually, and please remind me to come back to the other kind of lifestyle and diet points. But I don't want to miss this chance to make a point, which is the autoimmune paleo diet, as I'm sure some people have heard of, can be good for autoimmune conditions. And thyroid is certainly no exception to that. One of the reasons may be because the autoimmune paleo diet is oftentimes also a low iodine diet. And iodine is another big topic within thyroid. It's something else that I've reviewed in a very, very detailed manner on my website. The short version is that iodine, excessive intake of iodine, has been continually shown to be a risk factor and a stimulus for causing hypothyroid and thyroid autoimmunity. And the data here is so overwhelming and so incontrovertible. I don't know how anyone could really take issue with that. If you look at the high-level scientific data, there have been, I think, over 13 population-based review papers that have consistently shown that when iodine is added to the food supply or when people just have a high iodine intake, let's say maybe it's a Japanese coastal community that eats a lot of seaweed, that causes an increased amount of hypothyroidism and thyroid autoimmunity. Now, on the other end of that spectrum, if lots of iodine or excessive iodine can cause hypothyroid, what would happen if we went on a low iodine diet? And there actually have been some clinical trials showing that when people who are hypothyroid and or have Hashimoto's or thyroid autoimmunity, when they go on a low iodine diet usually being defined as 100 micrograms a day or less, we have seen reversal of hypothyroidism and in some cases improvement in thyroid autoimmunity. So when people go on, the autoimmune paleo diet, they're cutting out a lot of iodine-rich foods, and that is actually putting them into a low iodine diet. Iodine-rich foods being milk is often fortified with iodine. So aren't bread and grain products fortified with iodine. Conventional salt is also fortified with iodine, and eggs are also high in iodine. So a lot of the high iodine foods are actually inadvertently taken out of the diet when people go on the autoimmune paleo diet. And I think that is an additional mechanism or way through which the autoimmune paleo diet helps with thyroid conditions.
fascinating, because I would have thought iodine was just something that you get out of nori, which is that seafood kind of stuff that the Japanese people eat, but I didn't know it was in eggs. That's interesting.
Yes, and certainly sea vegetables are another source of that. So if you go on the autoimmune paleo diet and you're eating a lot of those foods, you may not be experiencing that low iodine effect. But if someone listening to this is thinking about or going on the autoimmune paleo diet, I would urge them to consider doing the low iodine version at least for a month and see what kind of improvement that might yield for them.
So if someone was to do this diet for a little while and then they break it, but not necessarily in a bad way, by going out and eating junk food or whatever, they go and eat eggs. Let's say they don't have an intolerance to eggs. Can that iodine affect their thyroid so much that it can make them feel tired for the rest of the day or make them feel like they're hyperthyroid?
Well, I wouldn't be inclined to think that just one, moderate to high iodine meal would be enough to cause that reaction. I haven't seen that with any of the patients that I work with in the clinic, so I don't think that would be highly likely. And as long as you're not eating a high amount of high iodine foods, you're probably going to be okay. I don't want people to think they can't have any iodine, but the way I would look at this would be, try this diet in the short term, and then if it helps, I would seek the counsel of a clinician who can guide you through what you do with this in the long term. So I'm sorry not to give more information there, but it's a more lengthy discussion in terms of how low iodine, how long, and for who. And there's other risk factors we have to weigh with that. But I would say give the low iodine a try initially. If it helps, great. Then revert back to a more normal iodine diet, which would be getting the RDA, which is about 1,100 micrograms a day. And if you just eat a normal diet and don't consume high amounts of very iodine-rich foods, you'll probably fall into that. So you go low for a little bit, then return back to moderate, see how you feel, and that will probably be enough to help people. I think the real benefit is just getting people off of excessive iodine consumption back to a more normal range, because it really is the excessive iodine consumption that causes a problem.
Gotcha. Now, you wanted me to make a note here to get you to talk about a few more lifestyle points or tips people can work on to help their thyroid.
Right. So we talked about stress. We talked about sleep.
Tap juice.
Right. So I think the other point about the tap water or things like sodas, the tap water will have fluoride in many cases if it's not filtered. And many soft drinks or sodas have bromine or bromide in them. So you certainly would want to be careful with those. And then the other thing just that I wanted to come back to briefly is just mentioning the gut. The gut can cause inflammation, which can cause this kind of functional thyroid disorder or functional hypothyroidism like we discussed a moment ago. But the gut can also fuel autoimmunity. In fact, we do have there's one exciting Italian study that took a group of Hashimoto's patients. They were all Hashimoto's patients that also had an infection with H. pylori, which is a gut bacterium. And they treated half of the subjects for the H. pylori, and they did not treat the other half. They found that in the group that eradicated the H. pylori, there was a significant drop in thyroid autoimmunity, whereas the other group, there was no change at all. So for people that are maybe trying to really manage their Hashimoto's, a good screening for gut infections and treatment may really help to bring down those numbers also. So that was the other piece that I wanted to make sure to kind of emphasize.
It's another win for functional medicine, because a normal doctor would just treat with thyroid hormone or whatever they might give you without even looking at that kind of stuff, right?
Right. And some people will need thyroid hormone, but we always, as you're alluding to here, we always want to try to dive in and get to the cause so that someone will need minimal to no medications in the long run.
It's interesting, just going back to a point you made earlier about soft drinks and bromine, I am beginning to realize that more and more that I talk to people like yourself, that owning a soft drink company would be the absolute best business model in the world, because if there's all this bromine in there, people's thyroids are getting suppressed and they're getting hypothyroid, so they're feeling tired all the time, and then they go to their soft drink to pick them up, and they get a bit of a caffeine hit for a little while, they feel better, and then because their thyroid's not working, they start feeling worse again, so they go for another soft drink, and it's just like this enormous vicious cycle.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's no reason to be drinking soft drinks, really. They provide no benefit. I mean, sure, every once in a while, if you want to just, you know, get your 20% of unhealthy activities in, whether it be drinking alcohol or staying up late or you know, eating or drinking bad food, okay, fine. But in terms of something that's a dietary staple that you're consuming every day, I just really see no reason why you would subject yourself to all the garbage that's in those drinks.
Yeah, I know. I used to drink about a liter of Coca-Cola every single day, and I reckon in the last 2 years I might have had one glass, and it was amazing what it did to me.
Holy smokes, that's a lot. Yeah.
Oh man, I was bad. I used to drink a lot of that stuff.
Man, well, good thing you stopped. You might be a diabetic by now if you had kept going.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Riccio. It's been you've been very insightful, and you've given us all a lot of stuff to go and work on here, a lot of helpful tips. Your website for everyone who's listening is drruscio.com, so that's drruscio.com. There's lots of great stuff on there. You've got your own podcast going on. It's called Health, Nutrition, and Functional Medicine with Dr. Riccio. So everyone should head over and check that one out. But thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Have a good day.
You too.
Raw Health Radio.